The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors. Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today's presentation is from U.S. Director of Operations for UPS, Myron Gray.
As President of U.S. Operations for UPS, Myron Gray is responsible for making sure that 15 million packages arrive where and when they're supposed to every day. Of course, he has a lot of help. More than 320,000 employees report up through the UPS organization to Myron. As the ultimate boss of that many people, Myron knows a thing or two about the subject that he's going to be talking about today, leadership. Myron believes that the kind of leadership that creates real change requires both vision and action. Myron began his career with UPS in 1978 as a part-time package handler in the Tennessee District while attending college. Prior to his current role, Myron served as the president of the Americas region covering 57 countries, including Canada, Mexico, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. In 2010, Myron led a strategic transformation of the company's U.S. small package business. He holds a degree in business administration from the University of Memphis and has completed advanced management programs at the Yale School of Business. Myron currently serves as the National Board of Governors and as Southeast Region Trustee for the Boys and Girls Clubs of America. He also sits on the boards of the Atlanta Police Foundation and the National Urban League. And when he's not at UPS, he's spending time with his family, or you could also find him on the golf course. Help me welcome Myron Gray.
It is a pleasure to be here with you, where I call Indiana the nation's crossroads. And from a logistics standpoint, I say that because you can get just about anywhere in the U.S. within 2 days from right here. So you should look at that as an advantage. That's why so many businesses are moving here, because you provide them with that advantage. And change is good, and I think that you're making all the right changes for all the right reasons here in Indiana. So thank you for having me. For someone who's been involved in the U.S. transportation business his entire career, it is always good to be here with you. And as you've just heard, I've been involved with UPS for more than 30 years. And I forgot to tell her to tell you I started when I was 2. But throughout that time, we've constantly looked at new ways to make our operations more efficient. One of the most important of those changes offers, I believe, a lesson in the subject that I want to talk to you about today, which is, in fact, leadership. And here's the takeaway. You always need to have the kind of leadership that creates real change, and know that it's built on a precise combination of vision and action. And I'll explain. A little more than 10 years ago, we told our drivers that you couldn't make any left-hand turns. But long before that official policy, we knew what anyone who sits in rush hour traffic knows. Left turns means you cross through traffic, which takes time and risk of collisions. But we wanted to confirm what everyone already knew in our gut. At UPS, we measure everything. And there's nothing more important at UPS than efficiency. So we put our IT resources to work to help us. And by the way, UPS on an annual basis spends more than $1 billion on IT. So as I spoke to a young man who's an MBA candidate at Ball State earlier, we're actually an engineering firm that just so happens to have a few trucks. The result of that advanced technology platform that I spoke of earlier is now called Orion, which gives our drivers a system to map out the best routes for them to take on a daily basis. Orion doesn't necessarily map the perfect route for our drivers, who make on average 120 stops a day. What Orion does is choose from millions of trillions of potential routes to give our drivers a very efficient route. Yes, I said millions of trillions. Based on that algorithm and our experience over time. And you know what? Orion and its massively complex algorithm told us, it told us don't take any left turns. Since 2004, turning right plus other efficiently optimizing efforts have saved about 10 million gallons of gas and reduced emissions equal to taking more than 5,000 cars off the road each year. Thank you. The leadership lesson here is that everything starts with a vision. But the route to realizing a vision for any of us personally or within our organizations is never perfect and almost never direct. It's filled with crossroads and multiple options. Most people and companies aren't ever aware that they're at a crossroad until they choose one direction over the other. But leaders must always assume there where multiple decisions and options intersect. Because as a leader, we face many more crossroads than we ever cross with straight pathways. Sometimes as a leader, you'll have to go left, and sometimes you'll have to take the long route around. What's most important is for a leader to understand where you're going. Because leadership is not only about what's next, it's always about what's now as well as what was, and finding the right balance between all three. We recently had a guest at UPS. His name is Vijay, bear with me, Vijay Govindarajan. That's a mouthful. But he's a professor at Dartmouth. He gave us great perspective on those three states of business. And if you know Vijay's work, you know that he always puts things in boxes. So Vijay says, box one is you managing the present. That's where you put things that you're doing right now to manage its performance. Box two is where you selectively forget the past. That's where you file all the underperforming, obsolete, and outdated stuff, products, services, policies, and assumptions. Box three is where you create the future. That's the box for initiatives that position you for the long term. Or looking at it another way, all organizations divide their time between three actions: preservation, destruction, and creation. According to Vijay, most organizations spend most of their time focused on the present, which he says is a short-sighted perspective. Not focusing on next because you're mired down in now means that you are actually going nowhere. Let me tell you a story that illustrates that, and it's a personal one. In 1998, I was in a leadership position as a district manager in what's called the Rocky Mountain District. It's consumed of Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana. This particular part of our business had been in business for over 25 years, and it had never been profitable. I knew that we needed to grow sales, and I thought we needed some new blood in the organization to do that. So I asked my boss if he would send a list of candidates that had some experience for sales. But he tells me he wants to send me this guy who has no sales experience, but he thinks he has what it takes to do it. Just talk to him, he said. See what you think. And if you don't like him, put him back on a plane and I'll send you what you asked for. So this person, we'll call him Jack, flies out to Denver. I meet him at the airport. I actually meet him at the gate. That's when you could do that. He shakes my hand and says, "Where's baggage claim?" I look him in the eye and say, "Don't worry about your bags." I'm thinking to myself, you're getting on that plane and you're going right back where you came from. So we sit down in the gate area and I start telling him about all the problems we have and why things haven't worked. And he finally looks me in the eye and he says, I know what you're doing. You're trying to talk to me about why I shouldn't have this job. And you really don't want me because you want somebody else. And he says squarely to me, but I'm not getting on that plane. This is my job. I know what you need to do, and I want to help you do it. And I said, let's go get your bags. So this guy was still wet behind the ears, but he had a tremendous amount of ideas. He helped change our way of thinking from focusing so much on the 10 things that we had to do today to the 10 new customers that we needed to find tomorrow. So we started looking for prospects and businesses, industries that we traditionally had never looked at. And we started to go see those prospects and learn more about their businesses. It may not sound like it, but it was actually a pretty radical change for us. That was a radical change for us as a business back in those days. We developed a long-term strategy, and guess what? It worked. Within 1 year, we made money when we'd never made money in the previous 25 years. If I had only focused on the present, I would have insisted on a sales guy who probably would have come out and tried to turn the business around in 3 months, probably using traditional sales tools and methods. But that would have left us stuck in the present. We all have to focus on the present. That's obviously how we get work done. But we also have to use now to anticipate what's happening next. And how do we do something about it? In other words, committing to the future before it happens. Once you see it that way, the present takes on a whole new significance. It's about having a vantage point, your vantage point, which as a leader is a unique one. I've learned through experience over a lot of years, 30 plus years, and a lot of different positions within this company. One of the things I explained to the MBA students earlier is I started on the bottom, at the very bottom. So when someone tells me something, I'm a quick study. I know if they're telling me what's right, I know if they're telling me what's wrong, and I could just give them that look like, let me know when you're finished. As you heard today, I manage over 320,000 people across the U.S. I'm older, hopefully a bit smarter, and my perspective is a lot different than, quite frankly, what it was when I was sorting packages every day. For a time as the Americas region manager, I also had responsibility, as you heard, for over 57 different countries. I'm actually glad that I started where I did, and I'm glad that I had that international experience. All those stops, starts, and all the crossroads that I've seen have given me a unique perspective and a different way of looking at things. You see, very few people in my organization have the perspective that I do. But here's the thing that everyone in our U.S. operations needs me to see the organization from their perspective as well. I've held, as I told you, practically every job that I'm responsible for overseeing. So I understand their day-to-day on-the-job challenges. It's now my job to help anticipate and solve some of the problems that they see. Having managed from coast to coast, I know that what matters most in Oakland, California, for example, may not make any difference at all here in Indiana or in Dallas. Laws and regulations are different, and they create different dynamics for our leaders. Having been at UPS for all these years, I know not only how we got to where we are, but where we're going. That's valuable information for figuring out how do we get to where we want to be next. As a leader, I also have to be a visionary that many times causes me to have my head on a swivel. That's especially true at a company like UPS, because we move products and goods for just about every industry that you can think of, from retail, healthcare, high tech, to automotive, government, aerospace, from small independent businesses to large enterprises. All that diversity gives us a finger on the pulse of what's happening here in our domestic as well as our global economies. Every day, we have approximately 2% of global GDP moving within our systems throughout our network. And that equates to over 6% of the U.S. domestic GDP here in the U.S. So I guess you could say we've become something of an economic bellwether. That's why you will often see our CEO or our CFO on MSNBC quoted regularly also on the Wall Street Journal. In fact, as I speak to you today, nearly 100,000 UPS package cars and nearly 500 UPS owned and operated aircraft are in various stages of delivering nearly 18 million packages somewhere around the world. At the same time, we're busy gathering data and developing a lot of insights. We're getting constant readings on what's happening now that feed into our vision of what might happen next. The people most interested in our insights are some of you, our customers. More and more customers in the wide range of industries we serve are looking to us to do a lot more than move their goods. To many, data has become as important, if not more important, than the packages that we deliver. As logistics has become a competitive difference, customers are looking to us to help solve their problems. You may have noticed our new tagline, United Problem Solvers. We still love logistics, the tagline that we've had over the past few years, but customers want our insights well beyond logistics. They want to know what's next over the hill and what's around the next corner and how it will impact their business. Not just trends, but what are the new disruptions? The kind of disruptions that can test assumptions and question your strategies, and in some cases, alter your plans. When we look at now around the world, we're starting to get a good sense of why and what to create next. As a leader, like a driver armed with Orion, we're starting to get a much better sense of the possibilities as we plan our routes for the future. One thing we know, we'll be dealing with three global game changers. One is shifting demographics. Two is empowered customers, and three is emerging markets. When we look at demographic shifts, we see two powerful forces. Much of the planet is getting older, and much of it is growing younger. There were 606 million people aged 60 or older in the year 2000. By 2050, that number will be close to 2 billion people. Such numbers pose a host of threats and opportunities for many industries. But nowhere is this more important than healthcare. So you have to deal with new regulations, growth in large molecule temperature sensitive products, and there are gaps in the worldwide healthcare system that the Ebola crisis made all too clear. As the population grows, so will the potential for more severe disruptions to occur. But we're not only getting older, we're also living differently, with expectations unlike those of previous generations. At the other end of that demographic spectrum, many of the developing economies in the world are seeing a surge in young people. Again, along with a surge in young people comes a host of new issues. The World Bank estimates that youth between 15 and 29 make up 44% of the world's 7.2 million people. This is the so-called youth bulge, and it's happening in places least prepared to give them jobs. In Africa, for an example, an amazing 40% of the population is under the age of 15, and 70% of Africa's population is under the age of 30. As this tide of young people collides with economies that have different difficulty providing them jobs, there are fears that the global disruptions we're witnessing will only worsen. The answer, the only answer, is jobs. Turning to consumers, for the first time in history, technology gives consumers control of research, shopping, and the entire buying process. That's why some people call you the new consumer. Actually, you're not new at all. You're just empowered. Empowered consumers come to the marketplace armed with a set of non-negotiable expectations. You want convenience, you want order, authenticity, and most of all, you want control. So I think it's fair to say that there were a few times, if any, in the history of business where change has come faster and from more directions than today. No wonder we really need to have our heads on a swivel. As leaders, our vision must incorporate events and issues that are completely new to all of us. Our actions against what we see will demand a precise combination of skills. Some leaders inspire change. Some leaders manage it. The best, and I would say a rare breed, do both. Many a leader has vision, and they've also failed at managing change effectively and productively. What's left is a reality they've envisioned, but not perhaps the reality that they have. If you have a vision for future change, you must make it actionable in the present. Well, you say, how? Remember that unique perspective I talked about? Now is when you use it. You can do it by influencing stakeholders and marshaling support from the top down, all the while keeping projects and people moving forward from the bottom up. Let's go back to those three disruptions for just a moment. Each provides an opportunity for enlightened leadership. Right now, our aging population and the growing youth population are creating a risk-inherent environment. Let's first look at aging. We see a tremendous opportunity for companies to deliver new medicines, services, products, and devices that support affordable, innovative, and efficient healthcare, especially in developing countries. That includes healthcare companies, of course, but also all of the many other companies that support healthcare and life sciences. To do that, they'll need efficient and reliable supply chains. Outdated procedures, reliance on paperwork, and the absence of standard practices impede efficient and reliable supply chains in many places. As an advocate for international trade, UPS encourages removing barriers that impede the movement of not only life-saving products, but of all goods across borders. That would help our business, of course, but it would help our customers even more. According to the Small Business Administration, companies participating in international trade are 20% more productive and have 20% better job growth than those that don't. Leadership is the second disruption. Empowered consumers is unfolding at hyper speed and touching every part of our economies. From my position on the front lines of commerce, we see that brand loyalty really is yesterday's news. That prize today is brand advocacy. It's not enough for people to love your product. You need them to inspire others to love it too. Consumers come to the marketplace armed with a set of non-negotiable expectations. You've got to meet them wherever they find convenience, and that's a lot more than halfway. For our company, the shift centers on a critical fact. Getting products from supplier to consumer is no longer simply a transportation issue. Increasingly, it's part of how consumers view the core value of a company's brand. We're no longer just delivering a company's product. For many of our supply chain and logistics customers, we're now part of their infrastructure that builds and defends their brands. For retailers and manufacturers, especially those in emerging markets, transportation is also a competitive difference. It's one more way of trying to address the needs of the online shopper. But delivery is only a competitive advantage if companies like mine can give you more control to your consumers in the last mile of that brand's journey. We're doing that with innovation services with what we call UPS My Choice and the UPS Access Network. UPS My Choice, as I spoke of, gives consumers online visibility and mobile access to see their UPS deliveries. So in closing, we must all commit now to make sure your customers and mine and consumers have what they need for what's next. Like the Orion driver figuring out the fastest and most efficient way to get from point A to point B. It takes looking ahead, analyzing, and deciding where the organization is going while understanding at all times where it actually is. There's an ancient Roman god called Janus. He is the god of beginnings, transitions, and endings, and he had a distinct advantage. He had two faces, one gazing forward into the future, the other looking back at the past. And while Janus might be an allegorical character, Janus, like Vision, is a categorical imperative for today's leaders. That's because vision is about seeing, not in one direction, but always in all of them. So when it comes to leadership today, turning right isn't always right. Seeing forward and back isn't seeing far enough. Sometimes left is right. And don't forget about sideways and up and down. But one thing's for sure, if Janus were real and reigning today, especially if he were running a business like yours and mine, two faces would hardly be enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to go ahead. We have a few minutes for a couple of questions. To what degree has the labor stoppage on the West Coast affected your operations and your bottom line?
Well, let me take you back to the last quarter. I spent an awful lot of time in my talk talking about e-commerce. As particularly the retailers were trying to get their product into the U.S. to get them to the stores, the ports shut down. So it forced them to add additional costs to get their product to the U.S. because they couldn't bring them into the West Coast ports and utilize the distribution patterns that they normally use. So I'll harken back to that other word I use. It was a disruption to transportation and logistics. It forced us to acquire additional aircraft. Well, how so? Because you couldn't get the goods in through the ports. So then those goods became air freight from Asia and the rest of the world where they were sourcing their product from. So for me, it was both an opportunity, but also it added additional costs. Try acquiring a leased aircraft at the peak season end of the year. So it's added cost because everyone who has one knows that it's a valuable commodity, so they raise the price. So it's added cost for me. But I have clients who have multi-year contracts that UPS adheres to. If you're in the third year of a five-year contract, as your business partner, I'm not going to raise your rates to help you in a pinch. But you're relying on me to get your goods to your end consumer. So it was a major disruption for UPS and our transportation network, but it also caused shifts in distribution patterns. Let me give you one additional example. And she's probably saying, I didn't ask you to go that deep.
That's all right.
So in a traditional sense, we have hubs that are located on the West Coast where you would normally drop your goods into the our hub and spoke system on the West Coast. When it becomes air freight, it gets dropped into Louisville right down the road into hubs that I'd already planned capacity for during that year. And now I've got to figure out how to elongate my sorts to take in that additional capacity that became air freight. And now I've hired 100,000 extra people on the West Coast that I don't have anything for them to do because the freight's coming in the middle of the company and not on the West Coast. So it requires a great juggling act. Let's just say something short of Houdini.
So many of our audience members want to know, they want to turn you, not an economist, but they want to know if you know if the U.S. Postal Service is going to survive, and if they don't, will you step in and take over that business?
That's a great question. And I wouldn't begin to try to answer that for the new Postmaster General.
Yes.
However, we are in coopetition with the USPS. We see them as a great competitor, and we also use them for last mile delivery. For instance, I don't necessarily want to send a driver to Cody, Wyoming if I don't have to. But if the Postmaster General has someone who's going, I'd like to use them as a last mile delivery person for me so I can defer costs but still make service. At the same time, we believe that now is the right time for postal reform. We don't believe that a government entity should be allowed to compete with private industry. And what's happened over the past few years, the post office has continued to subsidize first-class mail with their package delivery fleet. I don't know if any of you recently heard, but they've also now come to Congress looking for additional funds to upgrade its delivery fleet. And when you look at the pictures of the types of vehicles that they're looking for, guess what? They look just like mine.
That's interesting. Speaking of vehicles, how do you maintain all your vehicles?
With a lot of help.
I bet.
And we have our own internal mechanics and automotive group, and we have what we believe is a state-of-the-art rolling laboratory. UPS has the most economic green fleet of any company in the U.S. As a matter of fact, we most recently purchased 100 all-electric vehicles. They're going to be deployed in the Valley in California. We have more tractors that are either on CNG or liquid natural gas than any other company in the United States. And today, on an average week, we travel more than 4.5 million miles using those alternative fuel fleets.
That's terrific. One last question. Are you concerned with the new shipping company, Roadie? And how is UPS responding to this type of innovation?
I'm not only not concerned because UPS has a stake in Roadie.
That's terrific. Okay.
We have an enterprise investment firm that we look to invest in many small companies that we believe will be an extension of UPS, or we can use their proprietary software that they're developing to help enhance the technologies that we already have. So we look at Roadie as a good thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me thank Myron Gray.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a speech from Myron Gray, UPS Director of Operations, part of the 2014-2015 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. You can find more information on the Economic Club of Indiana at economicclubofindiana.com. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us.
Support for the Economic Club of Indiana is provided by the Lumina Foundation, with a goal to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025, focused on ensuring an accessible, responsive, and accountable higher education system.